here. Yeah, well, I'm going to come behind you first, okay? And you, okay, but let's just, you're going to turn around, okay? And stay like this, okay? And now what I want you to do is, when I count to three, or let's do this. When I say go, I want you to throw yourself back, okay? Ready? Set? Go.
Well, I don't trust you.
But we just did an...
And you're telling me to go...
Yes.
...throw myself back.
Just like you did it when you looked at me. Now I need you to do it without looking at me. But know that I'm not going to, you know, let you fall back, hit the floor, bang your head, or anything like that. I am going to catch you, okay? Just like we did it the first time around. It's just now you're just facing that way, okay? All right,
facing
ready?
Facing
that way.
Facing that way. Back, and you're going to...
Catch, yes. That's the point here. Okay.
I need to process that for a second.
Yes.
Go back, move over, but throw myself. Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Ready? Ready? Go.
You catch me, right?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Okay.
Way to go, Jesus. I trust you now.
No. Well, you have, okay, come here. Let's try this again.
Okay.
But this time, I don't want you to take steps back. I really want you to fall back.
Oh,
okay? You have to fall.
Step back, not holding.
Yes. Just, okay, ready?
Okay.
When I say, Barbara, go, you're going to go. All ready? Ready, Barbara, go. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that was good exercise. I'm getting it.
Yeah. That was almost. You're still working. We're still working on it. Let's try one more time. Last time. One more time. Okay. Barbara, I need you to trust me. Okay.
I trust you.
Okay. You trust me. All right. Wonderful. All right. Ready? When I say go. Ready, set, go. I'm behind.
No.
I'm back. Trust me, Barbara. Trust me. Ready? Come on. Don't think about it too much. You're overthinking. Okay. So please, just trust me and go. Ready? Set. Barbara. Let's concentrate. Barbara. Confía. Okay. Maybe Spanish works. Confía. Ready? Let's go. Ready, set,
I don't know.
Barbara, go. Go. Go.
Jesus, I'm sorry. I can't. I really can't. This is harder than what I thought.
Okay. It was just as easy as when you did it seeing me. Now you just hear my voice and you go. I need you to go. And it's going
to
change you. It's going
to
change you. Trust me.
You
have
to
trust me.
I don't understand this. This doesn't make any sense.
It will once you trust me. Trust me. Come on. We can do this. I will walk you through it. Barbara, I will walk you through it. Just believe. Okay? Just believe. Ready? When I count to three, let's use a counting method. Ready? One, two, three. Barbara, go.
I'm sorry, Jesus.
Okay.
You
don't trust me. Okay. Wow. That was very difficult. As much as I tried to communicate with her, we wanted her to go, right? We were ready for her to go. But what was her problem, my friends? Trust, right? As she, the first time around, she came and she easily, because she's seeing, right? Faith sometimes, you know, just to believe, you see, you believe, and you go for it. Because it's there, it's easy. Easy faith, you can say, or easy to believe. But the minute that you turn your back and you don't see what's there, what happens? it becomes what? Harder. It becomes harder. It just becomes harder. And no matter what you communicate, she was saying that it was trust, but even with the communication, it was just so hard for her to just accept it. You know, a lot of times that happens to us. We try to communicate with God, and sometimes, just sometimes, it is so hard for us to actually trust what God is trying to tell us. So today, what I want to present to you, Barbara, you can come up here. What I want to present to you is that, you know, we, every single day that we are in our community, that we are, you know, communicating with our families, etc., we tend to have what's called people skills issues, okay? We try to communicate with someone, and how many times have we communicated with someone and they still don't get it? Or the miscommunication is huge, like they do the complete opposite that they want us to do. How many of us have gone through that? I think we've all gone through that at one point in our lives, especially for those that have children, right? Okay? And so, especially for those that are married for over 20 years, right? Still happens? Okay. Not us. Mm-mm. Nope. But at the same time, I really believe that this what we're going to teach today is People Skills 101. This is the basics of communication skills. But we're putting a little bit of kick to it. And that kick, which is not a little bit, it's actually a lot, is godly communication, right? We have what's regular communication, and we have what's godly communication. So one of the things that I wanted to connect this with godly communication, is 1 Peter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, 8 through 12 says this. Finally, all of you being of one mind, have compassion, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, as tender-hearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to do this, that you may inherit a blessing. For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from what? From evil, and his lips from what? Speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and he hear, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. You know, communication is very important in the family circle, whether it's immediate family circle here, or the church family, okay? Or the community, the family that we have in the community, right? And so this is one of those things that we don't talk a lot about. We don't communicate a lot about what the importance of communication within the church. And if we're going to go and do VBS, we need to make sure that we're all going to be what? Connected, that we're all one, that we're all tenderhearted, that we are ready for us to be able to communicate effectively, but also not only effectively, but in a way that God wants us to communicate, a godly communication, okay? I want to share this with you. It says here, a diplomat once said, I know that you believe that you understood what you think I said, but I am not sure you realize that that what you heard was not what I meant. You know, perhaps you heard this axiom before, words do not mean at all, only people mean. And so sometimes what Barbara may try to convey to me and communicate with me, she may say one thing, right, in her words, but her actions or her body language is telling me another, okay? And I interpret it totally different, right? And so we have to make sure that we're on the same page.
Can I say something funny? Sure. About that? Talking about my kindergartens, I have talked about them before. I have one that is really emotional, and sometimes when he gets really angry and upset, he tends to raise his voice or scream, right? And I'm like, hey, I'm not going to say his name, but hey, can you please ask nicely? And he's like, can I have And I'm like, well, that's still not nice. Although police was there, that was still not nice. And I said, you needed to say it nicely, even with your body and even with your eyes and not rolling eyes and not attitude. And it's like, then he breathed and like, Mr. Driggs, can I please have some water? I said, that's much better. So just sometimes we think that we're saying something nice, but our body and our eyes and our whole entire body say something different.
That is very true. One of the things that I also understand is that wise speakers, if you want to be a wise speaker or a wise speaker, your message, the message that you're trying to convey, it really has to be clear, okay? Listen to this. A wise speaker has to have a clear message. Why is that important? Well, let me give you an example. Sometimes we try to convey a message to our kids. For example, if they're going to a birthday party, right? And so one of the things that we say to the kids when we go to this birthday party is like, hey, you got to behave, okay? Act accordingly. One of the things I always tell my son is, hey, remember, you're a PK. Everybody watching you. And I put this pressure on him, you know, sometimes that I didn't realize that I was doing to him, you know. And so I say, remember to be nice. Remember to say hello to the people. You know, remember to smile. And it's like, he's like, Dad, leave me alone. I know what to do. Okay. Instead, I have to try to improve on what I'm trying to convey to him. For example, instead of telling him what he needs to do and the way he should conduct himself, I can improve myself by saying, remember to thank, you know, Scotty for inviting you to the birthday party. You know, that's a different way of saying, hey, remember to do this or remember to be nice, right? And so by saying remember to him, remember to thank Scott and his mother for a good time that you know before you leave the party, by me stating that, that's something that he can identify with, something that he can utilize, versus me just always like clearly wanting him to respond to a certain way of me to showcase himself, right? And so why speakers are careful about their words and how they will be received and how it affects a person, how that person and affecting that person, how they are able to take in that message and how they're able to express or react to that message. So while the listener, you know, we have to think about, is this listener going to, how are they going to react when I give them this message? And so it's very important. There was a woman, I'm going to give you this quick story. There was a woman and she had called the fire department. And so the fire department picks up. Fire department, she goes, my house is burning. Somebody come. Click. And so the fire department's like, okay, you know. And so they don't know where to send the truck to because, you know, they didn't get any additional information. And so the fire chief, gets the message, hears the phone again, and picks it up. And then she's like, send the fire truck. It's really bad. Send the fire truck. And so, click, she hangs up again. And so he's just waiting there. He's like, okay, I gotta come up with an idea because I need to know where's this fire. And as he's, you know, he looks outside in the window, he can see somewhere in the town there's some smoke. There is a fire happening, but he can't pinpoint, he can't send people unless he knows exactly where the fire is. So he's thinking, he's like, instead of saying fire department, I'm going to ask her a question. So she calls again, and she calls again. Why are you guys not here? He goes, where's the fire? And she goes, in the kitchen. Click. He still did not get what? The information that he needed. The communication is what? Is limited. The communication is not clear. And so a lot of times we assume that our message is clear. We assume that the other person definitely understood. We assume a lot. And it's one of those things that I have to work on a lot of times in my life, not only with my spouse, but with my coworkers, with my church members, etc. And so we have to take that into consideration, okay? So I want to give you 6 tips to help you deliver clear and concise messages. How many of us think that we can use some tips? Amen? Right? Well, you may have heard of these before, but this really helps me, and I hope it helps you as well. The first one is get an eye level with the one with whom you are talking. What do you think about that, Barbara?
Definitely. I do that a lot with my kindergartens. I have to come down to their level so we can see eye to eye, so they can really put attention to me and cutting the attention of the person and making sure that person is listening and understanding is really important.
Do you think, Barbara, that if someone is on their laptop doing work from work, of course, doing their work, and you start to have a conversation about finance, do you think that is the best time to have a conversation about finances?
No, at all, Omar.
The only reason I say that, my friend, is because we have to make sure that the person is eye level, not only in the sense of like coming to their eye level of their, you know, little kids, but also coming to the eye level, meaning that we have some type of contact, like eye to eye. Why is that important? Because if the message is important, you need to know that that person is receiving what you're trying to convey to them, what you're trying to tell them. Okay. So number two is deliver important messages only when the other person is what? Is looking at you, okay? You have to make sure that the person is looking at you. So instead of me trying to look down at her and say, hey, we got to talk about finances, you know, or we got to talk about this problem, I need to go and sit next to her and say, hey, baby, how you doing? I know you're a little bit busy work. Is this the time? Can we talk about this right now? And so number three is give focused attention by what? By tuning into the emotional clues so you can sense warmth or hostility or negative nonverbal signals. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Barbara?
Yeah, definitely. It's important to know where everybody is at when it's time to have a conversation, because either emotionally, physically, or even spiritually, the person is not ready to receive or have that conversation that can be very intense or it can take more time than what the person has. So it is important to schedule sometimes these conversations, knowing that there's a time frame that is important also that communication go on.
Definitely. Communication is the sending of a message from a sender to a receiver. So when you're trying to convey this message, you have to make sure that the receiver is also matching the same intensity, mm-hmm. right? Or at least is understanding what's going on, what is affecting you, what is actually not allowing you or allowing you to what to receive that message. If there's something that's blocking it, like a laptop, like a cell phone, okay, like a children, right? If I'm trying to speak to her and she's cooking and cleaning, or she's cooking and taking care of my son and she's doing various things, there's no way I'm going to talk to her about finance at that moment just because, you know, I think it's the best time. It may not be the best time, right? So we have to, when we come into this conversation, we have to eliminate distractions by talking in a quiet place. That's the honest truth. It has to be a quiet place. One of my recommendations is do not talk in bed. Try to avoid bed, bedtime to do it. I know that's a quiet place. But try to pick a room or, you know, send your kids off to sleep and try to pick a quiet place. Whether it's, you know, your spouse or whoever it is, definitely pick a quiet space, because when it comes down to it, you don't want any type of distractions. Number five is, you want to say something?
No, I just think that it's important that the person who want to communicate something feel like you care, and that you are, that whatever she's going to say, even if you don't know, or he's going to say, even if you don't know what it is, or you know what it is, and it might not be a big deal for you, but it's definitely a big deal for the other person if they want to talk about it. And this is not only in marriage, it can be in any type of relationship. You know, giving that time, that attention, that fully attention and time to the person means that you care, that you are willing to listen, and that you're willing to resolve or get to some type of solution of whatever that issue is or the talk is about.
Yeah, it goes with the next one here. It says, give clear information in a non-threatening way that will convey the right message. Sometimes, you know, because of the situation, you're trying to, maybe you're a little too excited, or maybe you're a little too upset, whatever it is. We want to make sure that when we give this information, it is in a non-threatening way. One of the things that I've always told Barbara, you know, she, and this is nothing against her. This is just, we're different. We're totally different. Is that if you're trying to convey a message to me, It can't be in a certain tone where it seems almost like you're yelling at me. I shut down. Because when I was a child, I was always yelled at. That's how they conveyed messages to me. So as an adult, I don't like, if I feel that your tone is hot, I'm going to shut down. I say, listen, can we talk later? Because right now you're upset and I can't handle that.
Now, in my defense, it's not that I yell. It's that I'm Puerto Rican and we talk loud. And people think that we are fighting and we are, you know, arguing, but it's just we talk really loud. And I try to start, you know, like, okay, whatever, but it's just like get intense, you know, and the more intense it gets, the louder we are.
She is very intense. I get intense as well, too, but it's just that for her, I can talk loud and she'll laugh at me because she never hears me speak loud like that. So it's just funny how that dynamic works. But we understand after 20 years of marriage that in order for me to convey a message to her, I have to that she has to, like all the other steps, it has to be a quiet space. She can't be doing anything else. You know, I have to be able to make sure that I'm not emotionally tied into that where it's a threatening way. And for me, it's you know, same thing, but in a different way as well. And so you have to kind of figure each other out, whoever you're conveying this message, figure it out and know that you have to be clear on your message and non-threatening to that person in order for them to let the walls down. Number six is observe your culture's norms, which is what we're talking about. You know, I didn't understand that they speak very loud in Puerto Rico like that, and everything is just very loud. They're just, you know, not all, but majority, they're just very loud speakers, and they're loud about everything.
Even on the phone.
And so even in a funeral, you know, it's like everybody's loud. And so that's just part of the culture. They're loud. I grew up with my mom. She loved silence. My mom loved silence. So I grew up in a home that was very silent. The TV was at 4. You know, that was loud. It was just very silent. For whatever reason, my mom needed that peace. So I grew up that way, you know, in silence. And it was good. And I love silence. And so that's why for me.
In my house, the volume of the TV was 40. Plus we were talking loud. But we were laughing really loud. And we're talking over each other. That's how.
Yeah. So totally different from what I grew up with. Now, granted, when it came to discussions or fights, when my parents did discuss or fight, you know, that was a different situation. But I'm talking about just a regular conversation or, you know, when you're trying to convey something important. So what I wanted to enter into the next one is that we have a lot of what's called nonverbals communication that goes beyond words. And so this is very important. Hold tight because this is very important as well. 50%, look at this stat, 50% of the message when you're delivering it, okay, when you're delivering a message, 50% of that message is a nonverbal, meaning that it's done through gestures, okay? Whether, for example, if I tell my wife, baby, we need to talk about finances, the first thing that I always see in her face, okay, is her eyebrows go up like this, you know, like they just go up like, what, you know? And so I'm like, because she knows what that means. That means that we need to tighten up. And so, you know, no more Starbucks, okay? That's what that means. No, I'm just playing, baby. But those are things that happen. You know, like you have to see the eyes. Or when someone does this sometimes, right? What is she doing when she does this? Fellas, she's waiting to hear the excuse that you're going to give her. Okay, that's the excuse, really? Okay. And so there's a lot of nonverbals that go on. You know, some people speak with their hands and show their emotions, their body language, right? Whether it's an open or whether it's a close or whether it's hands in the back or, you know, hands in the pocket, whether it's like, you know? And so nonverbals are very important. That's almost 55% of communication is nonverbal through gestures, posture, facial expression, et cetera. And so we have to be aware of those nonverbals, right, Barbara?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that even as I'm taking my bachelor in management, this is a big deal even within companies and industry, you know. The nonverbal communication is as important as the verbal communication. It's very important and critical understanding this nonverbal communication in any type of relationship because it can be mean more. You know, I prefer when people talk and say what they need to say, that when they stay quiet and they don't say anything, but you see this look and you're like, oh, it's like more terrifying than the person really speaking and say to you what they need to say. So my husband now, that when I'm silent, it's like, okay, it's coming, you know, it's coming. Or I just say, I don't want to talk to you right now. Give me some time of time. But yeah, the nonverbal communication is as important or more important and critical than sometimes the verbal communication.
And sometimes, and that's rightfully said, my wife one time when we were just married, and I had a habit of every single time that she would bend over somewhere, I would smack her. And she said, stop it. And I'm like, well, we're married now, you know, like, let's just have fun. And so she would, every single time, bam, and I would hit her. And she said, you better stop it. And I'm like, what you going to do? What you going to do? And I'm just playing with her. But she thought she was serious about it. I thought she was joking, too. And I remember one time, I just saw it and I said, bloop, and I hit her.
This is why you invite me to be in your sermon?
I hit her, and I remember that there was a candle that we utilized, okay, for our wedding, that, you know, you burned the both candles. Man, that thing was huge. And she picked that thing up, and when I saw her pick it up, I knew she was serious. And I ran around the corner, and she slung that thing at me. Like, she was a pitcher for the New York Yankees. She just swung at me. And if I didn't, like, hit that corner, that would have been probably a broken shoulder or something like that. But I remember I got in the bathroom, and she's like, open the door. Open there. What did I tell you? I told you not to hit me anymore. And so I didn't, you know, this is, again, communication is so important.
Well, let me explain my aggressiveness. Right? Hold on really quick. And this is more in the serious note. But I don't know if I told him before or after we were married.
Yeah.
But things happened to me when I was younger. So any physical contact for me sometimes is hard, even with my husband. So, you know, he didn't probably knew at that time, and I have to explain to him later. So he could understand why I was very sensitive to those things. And so, you know, that was the reason why, but it kind of triggered. Yeah. So the communication was for me to, okay, I need to open up and tell him what had happened to me, that I'm very sensitive to those things and trigger certain things.
But we were just married, and I mean, we just got married, and it was just all fun and games in the beginning, you know. a powerful message.
He still do it.
A powerful message. One of the things that we can also talk about is finger pointing, accusingly. You know, you did, and this finger pointing thing drives some men crazy, okay? You point at a finger, or maybe even women too. You do this finger pointing, because you did this, and this is, what is this telling me? What are you doing here?
Accusing.
You're accusing, right? You're accusing. Or the, and the deep what? The deep sigh and the rolling of the eyes, right? I recall one time I was working, and one of the people that was assisting me, I was on a new accounting program, and I just wasn't getting some numbers correct. And so the person that was helping me, she goes, Omar, come here. And I was just upset because I wasn't getting it. And so I get up and I'm like, yes, ma'am. And then she goes, let me show you what you're doing wrong. And I said, yeah. But I rolled my eyes, right? I rolled my eyes like, yeah. But I wasn't rolling necessarily my eyes at her. I was just like, I was just tired of being called out on my mistake. But she was looking at me from a little mirror. She had a little mirror, and she can see me from the little mirror, and she thought that I rolled my eyes at her. So the next day I get called into the office, and they let me go because of that. And so that you know, those are powerful messages. When you roll your eyes, when you sigh, when your arms are folded, all those things are powerful messages.
I just want to say that we kind of talking a little bit more about marriage, but it is important that, you know, especially I want to talk a little bit about church, because this is not just a marriage conference that we're doing here. It's a communication overall in everything, work, church, and sometimes in even in marriage, these things might work out a little bit better because you live with a person. So either you fix the problem or you'll be mad for your entire life. But when it comes to church, it's easier for us to have this miscommunication because that person lives to their home and you live to their home and you don't see each other for the rest of the week. And things get worse. Things get worse sometimes in church with communication because we don't talk about it. You know, it's easier to ignore it while in a marriage, you live with a person, like I said, you see the person all the time. So at some point, you have to confront the problem. But sometimes in church, that doesn't happen. And it's easier just to ignore, and I sit in this corner, and you sit in that corner, and we go to church, and you go that door, and I go that door, and we don't talk about it. And it is very important that we understand that this can be happening in church. Not if we think that we're going to go to heaven, right? It cannot be happening. And unfortunately, it is happening. Last night, as we were visiting someone new, it's a young person, 17 years old, that got baptized. And we went to their house, and the parents are kind of like, happy with everything that is happening on this young person's life because he was in a position before and now he's a different person. Then the parents are happy, but it's also kind of hard to understand what's happening in his life. But as I was taking the time to talk, to get to know the mom and getting to know her, somehow, some way, we were talking about her family. We got into probably communication problems, and she's a visitor, and she still don't understand why when she go to church, because she know people in church, there's still two people that cannot talk to each other. And that's kind of hard to understand for a new person to come to church and still see these issues in church. Like, why you don't talk to her, but you invited me to church to get to know Jesus, but, you know, and they put two and two together. And she don't understand. Until this time, she don't understand. But I'm so glad that she's in a position that although she's not baptized, she's kind of ignoring that in a sense and not letting that interfere her relationship to get to know more Jesus. And I praise God for that because that's not always the case. Sometimes people are like, you invited me to church, but people don't talk to each other. I don't want to come to this church. So we need to be really careful and put our pride and selfishness to aside and have God help us to be able to communicate, fix problems, fix confrontation with people in church if we call each other brothers and sisters.
Amen. A nonverbal behaviors definitely speak louder than words. There was this this boy who harshly reprimanded his mom for a minor incident. And he interrupted her with these words, "Mom, you don't have to be mad about it." And so this infuriated the mother. And with anger in her eyes, she said loudly, "I am not, you know, angry." And so fortunately, this mother, she recognized her anger problem. And through skills of learned behavior and communication, she was able to improve on that. How many times have we not done that with our kids, right? Or with someone where we say we're not mad, but our body language, our nonverbal completely shows the complete opposite. It's funny because Barbara just showed me a video of her. I was going to tell you to put it on here, but show a video of my sister-in-law arguing with my little two-year-old nephew. And he's like, "Mommy," at the end. It was just so cute because she was like, "You need to go and sit down on the chair because you're going to eat some food for dinner," or something like that, right? And then he was like, "But Mommy, let me..." And you can't understand half of the words he's saying. But at the end, what did he say? At the end, he was like, he said, "Mommy, can you give me a hug? Can you give me a hug?" Why did he say, "Can you give me a hug" to his mom at the end? Why do you think, Barbara? Why do you think he asked for a hug at the end? Because he understood that his mom was what? The body language was angry. She was upset. So he was like, I know when Mommy gets upset, A, B, C happens to me. And so at that moment, he was like, Let me, before I go to that chair, let me get a hug from my mommy.
Let me fix my, yeah.
Let me fix it with some love, right?
Yeah, and she said, sit down. But he said, but give me a hug first.
Yeah, and so we have to be very, you know, intentional when it comes to this. All right, moving along, because I do apologize. Sometimes we take a little too long here. Okay, which of the following greatest impacts you? You know, our words, what impacts you the most? I'm that type of a word. You know, affirmation and things like that. Or the tone of voice. What is the tone of voice important to you? Maybe all of these, or face, or body language. Maybe those are the things that impact you the most. But we have to maintain this in mind. 55% of it is nonverbal, the way that we communicate, our face and our body language. 38% is your tone of voice, okay? And then only 7% is actually words. 7% is actually words, my friends. So this is something that is very, the way that we communicate is very important. The goal of this presentation is so that we can enhance in the home, in a workplace, equipping you with skills for sending a clear message to those that you love.
And that's okay? Why there's so much miscommunication, because, like I said, when it's person speak, at least the person is expressing, but what the body language and the tone of voice sometimes say something else. And then we if we don't resolve that problem, or we don't talk about it, then we're just going to leave trying to interpret in our own way what that silence mean, or the what that nonverbal communication mean. And then we started just creating this, you know, movie in our minds
assumptions.
That is probably more negative than
assumptions
worse
are
than what is
assumptions
happening.
Are very dangerous, my friends. Assumptions are very dangerous. We need to make sure that we understand. Okay, going back to 1 Peter 3, how can we tie in this with God, with what is God and godly communication? So going back to to 1 Peter 3:8-12. Where he says, finally, all of you be one-minded and have compassion for one another. I think that's where it starts, my friends. Godly communication requires that we turn from evil and do what? And do good in our walk and in our words. Okay? So what happens a lot of times is nobody here intentionally wants to have an argument with their spouse or with their son or with their daughter, right? That's not what we come for. A lot of times we just want to have a conversation, right? We may have some type of emotional feeling, right? But emotions, do they come and go? They come and go. Emotions come and go. And so we have to really communicate with God first and say, God, okay, I am your son. I am your daughter. How can I communicate effectively? Because a lot of times what happens is we allow the evil to actually, instead of allowing God to help us, we choose the evil. What is the evil? Is it really just the devil speaking to our minds? Yeah, sometimes. But where does the evil really resonate? In the heart, in your heart. Why? Because we put who first? Do we put God first? No, we're putting ourselves first. You hurt my feelings. You did this to me. You did that to me, right? You remember in 1955? When I was trying to take out the garbage and you told me, you know, like, that's what we do. We bring up stuff from the past, right?
That we forgive, but we don't.
Yeah, we say that we forgive, but we didn't. We didn't move on. And so because we're thinking about self, that's where the evil comes from as well. There's no good in us. So we need God. We need the Holy Spirit to help us to communicate. And if we put that first in our mind, that this is a soul that also that God loves, then I need to also walk the talk, okay? I need to also walk first and then talk. And so that is something that's very important that we can learn through here.
I can say that this also transfers in our relationship with God.
Yeah,
sometimes
absolutely.
We just pour all our needs and we forget to say the most important thing. And I don't know if the other ones talk about this, but it came to my mind. I want to say it before I forget. Sometimes when we express communication, we just want to spread all the negative things or everything that we are going to complain about or everything that is bothering us. But in our communication, there are important things that we forget to say, and it's, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I love you. I want to work this out. I understand you. Those phrases are more important than anything else that you're going to say. You know, and unfortunately, as you might feel that this is not important, but in today's day, I think our youth, even our own kids sometimes, and me working in the schools, most of these kids, their behavior problem is that they never have heard the word, I love you. I care for you. The minute, when I work with kids that have behavior, the minute that you start telling them, I love you, I care, I want to help you, you see their behavior change automatically. My little one that is test my faith every day in school, the minute I tell them, he know I'm upset with him, you know, and the minute I put him right on my face and I say, the first thing I tell him, hey, I love you and I want the best for you. Once I said that, I can tell him whatever I want and he will listen to me because he, the first thing that I'm telling him is I care. I'm doing this because I care, because I love you. I'm not just doing this because I want to be a bad teacher, you know, or giving you a hard time. I want to tell you because I love you. And this is the same thing in every single communication. You know, if you don't know what to say, because sometimes we don't know how to start a communication or what to say or whatever, just say that. Hey, I love you. I care for you. And I want to resolve this problem between you and me, or I want to talk about it. I know it's not going to be easy because we have waited 3, 4, 5 years, whatever, or 2 months or 3 months or whatever, but it might not take just one communication. We probably have to talk about it more, but I want to say I love you and care, and that's why I'm here, you know? So those things are more important than whatever else you're going to say in a communication.
Absolutely. The first thing is godly communication requires that we turn from evil, that we turn away from it, and we put ourselves, our ego aside, and do good in our walk. That's why in 1 Peter 3:11 says, and he must turn away from evil and do good, and he must seek peace and pursue it. Okay? So what this actually causes is for our behavior to support healthy relationships. This is the start of supporting and having healthier relationships. The second one, and we're almost done here. The second one is this, guys. Godly communication requires that we turn from evil and do good also in our words. Okay, that is the next thing, the next step. We turn, once we do it with in our walk, then we also will do it in our words. Okay, and then why do you think that Jesus spoke with authority? Okay, why did you think Jesus spoke with authority? It wasn't authority in the sense of like, oh, I am the boss. No, it was authority because he walked the talk. Okay, whatever he spoke about, he already had been walking it. And so we have to have that same mentality. We also have to walk with God as well and seeking peace. Turning from evil words means not retaliating when we are verbally abused. Okay, turning from evil words means not retaliating when we are verbally abused. And turning from evil words means refraining from deception. Okay, turning from evil words also means refraining from deception. Now, I can give you some examples, but due to time, I'm not going to go into it, but think about that very clearly. Sometimes evil words are being said, and you have to refrain yourself, okay, from the smoke screen. Lastly, godly communication requires that we do good by blessing others with words that build up. So as you're refraining, as you're trying to understand the communication, in your mind, you have to be in prayerful in a mindset, and then think about, how can I bless this person? Maybe they're hurt, and that's why they're conveying this message of hurt with me. How can I bless this person? Or if you're the person that's conveying the message, yes, I want to tell this person, or yes, I want to explain to this person that what they're doing is wrong and is hurting me, but how can I say, hey, how can I be a blessing to that person? And so that's why it is so important. It is vital for us to understand that. Ephesians 4:29 says, you must let no unwholesome word come out of your mouth, but only what is beneficial for the building up of the one in need, that it would give grace to those who hear, my friends.
And we have said this many times, and you have heard this many times. When we say something, we cannot take it back.
Yeah.
So you either have built that person or destroyed that person. You have either, you know, established a good start point with that person, or just completely forget about the relationship because it's not going to get any better. So we really need to, and this is something that I have to learn, because he probably think more when he's going to say something than what I do. And this is something that I have to learn. And more than learning, it's something that I really want to be part of me, to be able to be like that, where I can really take the time to think before I say something, or I better stay quiet and say, you know what, give me some time to think about that, or whatever, or express it in a different way that I can take my time to write it or whatever. But it's just so important that we take that second, you know, you just take 1 or 2 seconds to kind of like, let me process what this person said. It really hurt me. It really got me upset. But how can I make it better?
How can it be a blessing?
How can it be a blessing? Because overall, I think we need to think about, like Omar said, when we put ourselves first, then we're going to think about us and what is best for us and what benefit I can get for me. But when we think about Christian-like and godly, right, where, like, this person that is in front of me, as much as it hurt me, is a child of God, you know? And it's someone that Jesus created, and I need to love them as much as Jesus loved me, you know? And I need to do the best to fix this, you know? And when we start thinking like that, what will Jesus do? What Jesus want me to do? Then we can start taking out ourselves from the picture and really do what is best for that person and our relationship with that person anywhere in our lives. So, and that sometimes is hard to do because, again, we put ourselves first most of the times. It's like, but that person hurt me. It's me who wants, you know, and when we start thinking about me, then selfishness and all those things come into our hearts and just create more anger, more, you know,
barriers and walls.
Yes, and all these words that are gonna just offend the person and hurt more the person and just break relationships, and that's not what we want.
No, that's not what God wants, definitely. So godly communication requires that we turn from evil and do good in our work, in our words. You know, the reason I brought this up is I had a very intense episode. Thank you, my love. I had a very intense episode this past Friday. I went to go visit our sister Becky at the hospital. And as I was waiting there, you know, I when I walked in, they gave me this tag that said pastor and everything. They allowed me to go up to go see her. And as I was waiting there, I had walked into her room, and there was a doctor speaking to her, letting her know what was going to happen to her, basically, what were the options and things of that nature. Wasn't good news. And so I took a step back, and I was trying to think, what am I going to tell Becky as I go in? How am I going to encourage her? How, you know, I was trying to think of my method of communication. What hope can I give her? What, you know, what words can I say and that will make her feel a little bit better? And so as I was in my thought process, unfortunately, I got interrupted by this doctor. And the doctor comes and starts questioning me. He says, excuse me, sir, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, I'm just waiting for the doctor to finish there in the room to see the patient. And he goes, to see my friend is what I said. He goes, so who called you? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Like, yeah, who called you? Did a family member call you? Who called you? And it was everything. He could have asked those questions a little bit differently, but he was, number one, like, in my face. Number two, his body, you know, he was a lot taller than I am, so his body was, like, above mine, like, over mine. And I'm like this, practically, and he's like, who called you? Why are you here? And I said, well, I spoke to Miss Becky, and she stated that I can come and see her personally. And he goes, oh, is that so? And I'm like, yes. But who called you, really? You know this person? You know this person in this room? You're telling me you know this person? And I'm like, yes. And for a split second, the old Omar really wanted to come out and, like, tell him off, you know? You know, I'm not, that's just the way I felt at that moment, because I was so distraught, and I really wanted to say to him I had a nice couple words for him, you know? But at that moment, I said, I have to be godly. as much as I had to swallow my pride, you know, I had to swallow my pride and allow this man to belittle me, basically. And it was tough because I was there for, you know, I was just serving God. I was there to represent, you know, and help and all that. And here comes this man to attacking me on what I was doing. Those two things that I got out of that, as I went, entered into the room and spoke to Becky and was able to try to find some words to console her. I don't know if I honestly did. I think I was more heartbroken probably than she was, because I just didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I had heard everything. And anyways, but when I came out, it still bothered me how this man, this doctor, you know, treated me. I was like, wow, that's pretty harsh, you know? And there was one thing that stuck to me. He said, "Who called you?" And so when I spoke to my mom and I kind of told her the news and what had happened and transpired, she said to me, "Well, Omar, you know, the enemy tries to always, you know, get at you and all this other stuff." And I said, "Yeah, Mom, you know what? I should have said, when he asked me who called me, I should have said, God called me." I should have said that. You know, and so I should have said God called me. But the reality is, and how I want to bring this together, is that God has called each and one of us. You know, God has called each and one of us to be that difference. If I would have imagined, I would have been on the news. If I would have just blurted out, and the next thing you know, pastor in Wenatchee took it all out on the doctor, you know, punched the doctor in the nose or something, you know, like that would have been the news, you know, because that's like where that was leading to, the evil, the ego in me. But I thank God that he allowed me to stay calm, answer his questions, and let him keep moving. You know, right after that, a lady came out, a nurse came out. She said, "I am so sorry. Are you okay?" She had heard the whole ordeal. And then the doctor that was in there also came out, and he said, "I'm so sorry about that." And they left, and I said, "Oh, okay." You know, it's the example, guys. It's the example that we give, the nonverbals, right? Had I been more upfront with him or whatever it was, or rolled my eyes or, "Oh, here we go again," and it would have been a totally different outcome. Maybe this gentleman needed to know that there was a God that existed, that we can be patient, that we are willing to listen, that we're walking what we talk. So I wanted to leave you with that today. There is part two to this. I will be with you for three Sabbaths in a row. This is the first one. The next one is it gets a little more intense. And so I really want us to continue to listen to these people skills. I still have to learn, and hopefully you can learn as well. Dr. Keith, if you can come here for a second. You know, in regards to Becky, and I've gone to see her, I actually spoke to her daughter this morning, and you know, I wanted to Keith, since he has a little bit more familiarity with the whole situation, if you can kind of let the group know, let our church know what's going on and what she's expecting, and how we can help.
So many of you, I'm sure, have heard that Becky is back from the hospital. But Becky is dying. She hasn't had anything to eat or drink for 2 weeks. She is the time that we visited her yesterday, very alert and very well able to interact with you. She loves all of you. She told me, you know, other than Luane and Esther, she has been in this congregation longer than anybody else here. So she wants you to come visit her. You know, she wants to hear what you like. She wants to be able to share with you what she thinks. She loves all of us. When we visit her, we talked about her family or how she came into the church or, you know, different things like that. Ask her what's meaningful to you. Tell her about a great experience that you've had in the church, you know, what you appreciate about it, what you appreciate about her. So I suspect that she has maybe about a week to live, maybe a little bit more. You can't always predict, but she grows weaker by the day. You know, she doesn't have IVs, she can't take anything by mouth. So her plea is, come see me. I love you.
Amen. Amen. And so, yeah, and I hopefully we can all take the time to go see her and spend time with her. And so, lastly, is that her daughter did tell me that unfortunately a lot of the resources that they had to utilize in transporting her and stuff like that. So they're low on resources. If there's anything that we can do to help as a church, there is the funeral home that is taking care of her is providing a link in which the funds will go directly towards her funeral. Her funeral will cost about $8,000 because it is going to be held on a weekend. I'm hoping that we can utilize our church for that. I know this is a very tough topic to talk about, but I just want to let you know that, you know, we're trying to do everything that we can to make it easy for her family, but also make it easy for Miss Becky to know that she don't have to think about anything about this in her last moments here with us as she goes to sleep in the Lord. So,
link that the funeral home has provided, it's called empathyfunding.com. And she's made all, the family has made all the arrangements. If you would like, you could go to that. And they have assured us that all the funds that go to that, they take none of it. It all goes to help support what the funeral costs are. And once it's reached, then they don't accept anymore, you know. So nobody is making any money from this. It is all just to help Becky. And that's what it's there for. So she would love to see you. That's what she wants to have most, to see you. And so if you have...
What's the name of the funeral home?
It's called now River Valley Funeral. Formerly was Precht Harrison and in Okanagan. She is going to be buried in Bridgeport, I think next to her father, mm-hmm. is what she has desired. So it's called empathy-funding.com if you are inclined to look at it that way. So.
Thank you. Okay, church family, let's go ahead and stand, and we're going to sing our last song. Thank you once again for listening, and hopefully I was able to communicate with you today the importance of communication.